radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 15th of November 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, it's Friday night. We've reached the end of another week. And of course, that means we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, good evening to you, sir. How are you doing?
Good evening, Sven. I'm doing fine. Can't be long there till Santa comes, surely.
It can't be long until the final episode of Freemasonic Victory of World War II, I think. I believe it's already up there and available for viewers to watch on BitChute. Yeah. Is that correct?
On BitChute, yeah. It's no possibility of YouTube, right? So BitChute, yeah.
Well, we need to support BitChute, don't we? We need to get as much content as we can on there and promote it as much as we can so that people use it and we get more viewers there. Obviously it's less numbers than you would get at YouTube, but you're not going to get banned. You don't have to self-censor.
Well, as a video maker, you won't believe, just what that means, because you put a lot of effort into a video, even though it's 15 minutes. And hey, the week after it's gone, heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, it really must be heartbreaking. I mean, I said that when E. Michael Jones' channel got taken down. You think the guy is 71, 72 years old, and he's been putting videos up there for the last 10 years. He had, I don't know how many subscribers he had, but, that was obvious. That was his contact with his viewers that had subscribed to his channel, that wanted to see his content, and it just gets snatched away from him. With totally illegally, I think, because it's got nothing to do with terms of service violations. Because obviously, when he joined up with YouTube, they didn't have terms of service like that. When you joined up with YouTube, they didn't have terms of service like that. And they might want to change them, but they need to get your permission to do something like that. And if it's going to affect you like that, it's got to be illegal.
As far as I know, it is illegal. I think they're being challenged and all, I think, because they're actually a public forum, in a sense, but they have changed that to a forum of their ideology, if you like, which is not what they're supposed to be. And they're being challenged. I think a lawyer in America is going to challenge them, which is pretty good.
Well, you've also got all these missing YouTube bits all over the internet. I forget who it was that was saying this to me the other day. Yeah,
I was saying, I found some more today. Unbelievable. We're reading through all the script, and then right at the bottom, the video was there to follow on to it, and it wasn't there, if you know what I mean. Same old grey slab.
Well, I had this problem with the website a while back. We used to be on Stitcher, and we used to be on TuneIn and various podcast platforms, and we had the links to them on every page, of course. So we were advertising their platform, and they were hosting our podcasts, and then they bowed to pressure. They didn't even give a reason. They just took us down, and all the links were broken, which meant I had to go all the way back and remove them all, or else just leave them there and leave all these broken links up. And that must be, as you say, all over the internet now. There are broken links, and it just looks a complete mess, and it's all ideologically driven, because nobody breaks terms of service agreements intentionally. They don't make them clear what they are. And look at Red Ice. They were removed, and they didn't have anything that was flagged. We were removed from Twitter. We didn't have anything that was flagged on Twitter. You were removed. I mean, did you have any videos that were flagged when you got removed, Dennis? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of. No, I mean, what they did with me, they actually put a thing up on the channel, the front of my channel, saying that there are no videos available on this website for the UK viewers, but for the US viewers, they were able to access quite a few of them. Not all of them, but
And it's completely arbitrary. There's no real reason for it. And then you can look at Xurious, who is making instrumental music with no lyrics. Every single one of his videos was zapped. And there was just nothing there on his channel. And it was instrumental music. I mean, how does that make you feel? I mean, that you just got to think, well, that's a personal attack on him as a person. Because it's not like he was putting any of his thoughts like into writing or words. He was just writing music, and YouTube deplatformed him. It's disgusting what they're doing.
They don't even give a reason, do they? They don't feel they have to give a reason.
Yeah, I guess they think they're so powerful that that who's going to take them to court over it? Who's going to take them to court?
This guy's supposed to be taking up the case anyway. I actually saw a video on it. But when we look back now, when we realise that YouTube is owned by Google, and Google are Google as we know, it's surprising that we got anything up. In fact, the one thing that did probably shock him was The Greatest Story Never Told, which probably took him completely by surprise. And I managed to get up 20 episodes before they jumped on it. But by then it were all around the internet. And I suppose that must have annoyed them because, I was using their kind of transport, if you like.
Well, you were ahead of the game as well because you put them all up on your own websites. You got three of your own websites, haven't you? One for each documentary series. So, you were ahead of them there. You preempted them that they were likely going to ban it. But at the time, there was loads of documentaries that you could see. You could see all these conspiracy theory ones, all these David Icke ones. There was one, there was Zeitgeist, there was something about a ring. There were all these different documentaries that you could look at, exposing conspiracies, truth movement stuff. And then there was
9/11 especially.
And then there was the World War II information as well. I mean, YouTube used to be quite good like that. And, it didn't seem to be that there were any real terms of service apart from no pornography, I guess, or put adult on it if you do.
Most of the information I got was through YouTube, not just the UK YouTube with the US, but other parts as well. So, I mean, they were quite happy in the early days to let these things go up. It was all dismantled. It wasn't like, it was all gelled together in a documentary, which I was able to do. I was able to get these little pieces of jigsaws and put them together into a main documentary, which then, we know what happened after that. So they must have been annoyed. Somebody somewhere would have been annoyed. I'm pretty sure them two Russians who owned Google were.
Sergey Brin, I think that's his name, isn't it?
But
I think
he's only worth about 50 billion, isn't he?
Yeah, it was after Trump won the election. That was when they really clamped down on it. It was after Trump won the election and they said, right, we're going to ban anything that's right of centre from all these websites, and maybe that will prevent him from winning again. But just to go back there, when you made the first documentary, I mean, that was made up of lots of clips from other documentaries, as you were saying. And they must have been available on YouTube, and that was the beauty of it. You could recycle all these old documentaries that were on there and make new things out of them. Upscale, upgrade them. Is it upgrade them, upscale them when you upcycle? You're upcycling these old documentaries.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all available in the public domain. So, but one of the big criticisms of it, of the people who, who are friends, they said it's just a jumbled mess of different commentators and different documentaries. But, I mean, it makes no difference to me who's saying the words if it's one person or it's 10. It doesn't make any difference. It's still being said, and they were taken from, the majority at least, were taken from Allied documentaries where they actually talked about the Soviets putting prisoners, their own prisoners, in gulags, talked about British soldiers admitting to the Blueberg massacre, and they could hear the machine guns going off. I mean, it was self-explanatory, really, and I think that's what really a lot of people were shocked at. And, I've had many, many emails over the years saying how the lies have changed, but I'm pretty sure the two Russians with the 50 billion weren't impressed,
Well, it was held together by the narration, which was done in text, wasn't it? There was like a storyboard bit in between each clip explaining what was going on. And that held it all together. And that's like the documentaries you see on TV anyway. They all have different guests on them. They all have different experts speaking.
Of course they do.
And, you know, that's what the documentary was. All different
experts. But that's all they could criticise. You know, there are two ways of criticising it. There was, don't watch it, it's just a jumbled up lot of text with different documentaries all mashed together. Or it's Nazi propaganda, don't go near it. But the reason they say don't go near it is because they know, and as we'll see in the first part of this video, what I've done tonight, how the ADL and the Southern Comfort Law refused then to actually acknowledge it, didn't challenge it. I suddenly got less people having a go at me on YouTube and everything just went quiet. And to be honest, the tactics worked, because if you go on IMDb today, probably the last review is probably 3 or 4 months ago. So it's starting to take a hold where people find it more difficult to view it. And Jews do what they do, don't they, you know?
Yeah, you bring up there the final episode of the documentary, because right at the beginning of that you refer to this, and you refer to the ADL and the SPLC actually avoiding The Greatest Story Never Told and avoiding mentioning it, because they know that it's so successful. And you know, that's the same with Hope Not Hate. You know, they used to mention us quite a bit, and each time they mentioned us, we would get thousands more listeners, and it would have the opposite effect. And they left us out of their last state of hate thing. You know, we were quite conspicuously absent from it. And I think that's probably the reason, because, you know, they know that we put across a good image, and people, rather than being turned off by what they hear, they like what they hear. They identify with what they hear.
That's right.
And they realize that we're not tattooed thugs looking for a fight. You know, we're just people that love our own people and are concerned with truth in history, which is what your documentary series is. It's all about finding the truth in history. Who is it that's actually speaking there at the beginning, Dennis?
Oh, that's my friend whose documentary was taken down from YouTube, which the early part of his lecture I based the documentary on. And that was Evan Sadler. We mentioned it last week. And the actual name of that documentary was called, or the lecture, was called The Illuminati Freemasonry and the New World Order. Jewish bankers are all behind the wars of the 20th century. And he did a lecture, I think it was about 2.5 hours, where he researched really deeply. And it fascinated me. And I could see, you know, where he was coming from. He wasn't exactly pro-Nazi, but he was saying things like Hitler was a Christian, and he knew what the Bolsheviks had done in Russia and what they intended to do in Germany, everything that I concluded. And so a lot of it, you know, I did base some stuff on it. And for instance, the Versailles Treaty, where they mentioned the Jews. Remember when all the Jews were on the council, Privy Council?
Yeah.
Round about World War One, nobody knew all the Jews were on there. And like I said, he researched that, and I looked into it myself, and there it were. So suddenly you've got all these people. What it turned out to be, instead of the Jews being taken there for advice by the prime ministers and the presidents, the Jews were taking their minions there to tell them what to do.
Yeah, that was the incredible thing, wasn't it? Every single one of the delegates at the Versailles Peace Conference had a Jewish deputy with them. Every single one of them. So effectively, you had, you know, you had the Jews guiding the whole thing. You had instead of having, you know, all these different groups trying to get what they wanted, you had one supranational group guiding each one of these other groups in the direction they wanted it to go. That's the incredible thing. Yeah, I think that's the first time I'd heard of that.
Rothschild was the guy who put it all together. Nathan Rothschild. I mean, it was, in effect, a Masonic celebration of winning World War One and all the benefits what come from it.
And were you saying then that this guy, that put out this lecture on the Illuminati and the rest of it, so he was a bit of an inspiration for the series, was he? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. I mean, I'd come across it a while back. And to be honest, if you even speak today, I think he's a pastor today, where he is up on YouTube with other videos of other lectures, but he talks more about, you know, the end days and you know, the New World Order on them terms. And he talks quite fluently. But in this particular lecture, he kind of stumbles over his words quite a number of times, which some comments found off-putting. But if you went beyond that and listened to the subject matter, his research was incredible. It really was. You know me, I'm a lover of research myself, and I couldn't resist. And once I'd seen it a couple of times, I thought there's got to be some kind of a basis of a documentary of all this.
Why do you think he was stumbling his words? Do you think he was shocked or he didn't, you know, surprised at what he'd found and what he was having to say, or was it just, you know, just nerves or something?
Possibly nerves, because like I said today, when you were listening to speak today, he's more than fluent. But in them, you know, I mean, I'm probably going back to just 80s, maybe early 90s, and he obviously weren't as fluent. And even though, you know, he did a good job, and you know, his research and the subject matter was good, there were some comments saying, you know, that it's spoiling it for him. And if I'd have had the time, I would have cleaned it all up for him and stuck it back up again. But obviously, I was doing the documentary myself, so.
Well, it takes a fair bit of courage to break free from that conspiracy circle, really, going round and round in circles. Because, every, you know, within that, they're all saying, well, Hitler is a bad guy, but the Freemasons are behind it all, and usury is behind it all, and the bankers are behind it all. But the anti-Zionist Jews are okay, and it's not all Jews, and Hitler was a bad guy, and they go round and round and round in circles. And then when you actually look into it, you see that Hitler was the only one that really took on both the Freemasons and the Jews, and showed that that was the solution, basically, was to remove them from your country. And then you've got your country working in the way that it should be for the good of the nation. And he showed that it was those two forces together that were standing in the way of the nations being contented and happy and finding their place in the world. So, of course, he had to be smeared and attacked, and they had to make him out to be the devil incarnate and deter people as much as possible from researching it. So I guess the ADL and the SPLC, they're really stuck, aren't they? Because if they mention it, when they try to deter people from investigating it, you know, people are going to look up your documentary and they're going to see the information in there, and they're going to know that they've been lied to by the ADL and the SPLC.
I think the facts speak for themselves. I don't think there's ever been a documentary which has changed so many people's opinion about somebody who was classed so evil. I really don't. I mean, I'm not singing myself praises. I was amazed at the reaction myself. But when you actually look at all the comments on YouTube at the time, everything changed. I mean, I honestly think that they did a worldwide sweep of a ban of all the nationalists because of the comments what were coming on YouTube that were no longer sticking. When they were saying things about the Holocaust, or saying things about Hitler and the Nazis, there were comments underneath by the dozen saying, you know, the guy, no, we know you're lying type thing. And there's no way they could win that argument. Then the cat was out of the bag. So they probably just decided just to clear the decks.
Well, it woke hundreds of thousands of people up, didn't it? I mean, do you recall the highest number of views that you can remember seeing on there?
What, of the documentary?
Yeah. Do you remember the highest number you saw?
Well, the first one was, our official one was taken down at a million.
A million.
But since then, there's others been up on YouTube which I came across. I mean, obviously it was translated in other languages in Sweden, in Spain, in, you know, Hungarian or whatever. You know, there were a lot of translated Croatian, and so it just mounted up. And somebody asked me once, "What do you think the figure is?" And I couldn't specifically say, but if you look at just a million at our channel on YouTube, and then you think about all the other channels what shadowed it and run it up, You know, there were some 500,000 what I saw. You're probably talking a minimum of 10 million, and I'm probably being conservative there.
That's incredible. I mean, just getting a million people and affecting a million people's lives in that way is an incredible thing. You know, to get it up into
I think they said in 2016, it was the most watched documentary by nationalists. And this is just before the Trump election, if you can recall, where suddenly there was a great awakening. And, you know, I can't deny that the documentary had a lot to do with that, you know. And people have even today come on and leave comments saying it had that effect on them. And I don't think there's ever been a documentary that has had that powerful an effect.
Oh, it's life-changing. Every nationalist I meet mentions it. Literally, every nationalist I've ever met has mentioned that documentary. It's been seen by everyone. And, you know, this is what was so important about it, and the timing of it as well. Because you yes. mentioned in this final episode as well, about how they were hoping that, you know, the last of the eyewitnesses would just shut up and die out, basically. And that yes. people would forget the truth. And the internet comes along, your documentary comes along, and you've got a whole new generation of people that know that they've been lied to, which they weren't expecting.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're particularly lucky with Mr. I, who is an eyewitness. I mean, those interviews that I've been doing with him, they are eyewitness accounts. So Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson said to me the other day, he said that, you know, these are eyewitness accounts. These are accounts that can be cited by historians, those interviews that I'm doing with him.
Definitely,
you know, it's
definitely.
Really important stuff that, you know, is just not being covered anywhere else apart from here right. with our alternative media that we have as nationalists.
Well, to be honest, I watched the news last night and they were talking to a conservative, I think, foreign minister, and they asked her about the immigration policy if the conservatives won the election. And the specific question was, will you have less immigrants? And all she could say were, well, we're going to have more control over the immigrants. Yeah, but are you going to have less? Well, we'll certainly have the control to keep, you know, the figures what, you know, are best. But she wouldn't be caught on a definite, we will definitely have less immigrants. And then they went to the Labour person, exactly the same. They wouldn't commit themselves to dropping immigration levels. And they're at record levels as they are now, even though since we've left Brexit, they have dropped. So what they were like, before the Brexit vote, God knows. And obviously, even if we come out of the EU, then we'll have people coming in from other countries anyway, which don't even belong to the EU, but still a problem. So it is we're in a situation where I think we are Adolf Hitler. This is what amazes me when people say that Adolf Hitler was a puppet. Without Adolf Hitler revealing to the German people the agenda of the Zionists and the Jews, we would still be now walking around in the dark and they would be doing whatever they wanted without any hassle.
I think with the immigration, the conservatives, they know that if they say, well, we're going to bring immigration down, they're going to be attacked, they're going to be called racist, all the rest of it. If they say, well, we're going to leave it as it is or it's going to go up, then they know they're going to lose all their support from the conservative people. You know, and plus they've got this non-white that is in charge of immigration now. She's saying, well, we're going to have this points-based system, but, you know, we want to be educating our own people. And the one thing that really annoys me is she's got rural areas marked specifically for non-skilled workers. According to her, farmers are worried that they're not going to have enough non-skilled workers to pick fruit. So what that means is the whitest areas in the country are being earmarked for an invasion of non-whites and gypos under this, you know, this disguise of, oh, we need them to pick fruit. So they're going to dump off all the uneducated idiots from the third world in the rural areas. That's, you know, that's what it seemed to me. Really, you know, I was really annoyed at that. You got to look at the after effects of what they're saying, because what they say, they try to make it sound as if it's, you know, it's all good and it's all going to be helpful for the country, but it never is. It's always harmful to us. You know, that's what they're used for. Well, let's get back to this final episode here. You start off with this bit about the ADL and the SBLC, and then you move into a memo that was sent to you, memo 31/48. Was that emailed to you? What is this memo? Yeah. And where did it come from?
Well, I've got certain people who send me things from time to time, and I've got quite a good relationship with them, and we send emails backwards and forwards. And this came from Spain. It's a lady out there, is a good researcher. And she'd been following my work, and she got in touch with me, and she said, I've got one or two things I'd like to send you. She's got an archive.org site where she'll email me to get there quick before they get taken down, and some have been taken down, what she's put up. But this particular one was interesting because it was from Austria in 1946, which means we're now in Allied hands and the war finished in 1945. So, you know, the denazification is coming into play and everything else. And what it actually is, this document...
In 1948, wasn't it, Dennis? January 1948? Yeah, January
46. Yeah. Well, even more so then. By then, you know, things are getting more back to under Allied control. And what the thing is, it's a document from the military, the Allied military in Austria, warning people: enough is enough. We know you're lying now about that. You know, the gas chambers. It's been proven, and it can also be proven that torture has been used to get the Germans to confess. And this is an official document. And it goes on to say it lists all the camps in the West are now known not to have had gas chambers. And the reason places like Auschwitz weren't on were because they were still under the Soviet control. So it's basically saying, it's admitting that there's liars, people coming up, and they threatened them with perjury. It's all there in the English translation. And I just thought that was a pretty significant document.
So they were threatening them with the law courts if they were to continue saying that Jews were gassed by Germans in those camps.
In particular Jews. It says that in those, I'm quoting, in particular Jews, yeah.
And, the real important thing about this is that the Nuremberg trials were in 1945 and 1946, and this memo is in 1948. And the memo is saying those confessions were obtained through torture. They're not admissible. And if people continue to lie about this, they're going to feel the full force of the law. And that was just 2 years after Nuremberg. Yeah. So really, it's contradicting the Nuremberg verdict, isn't it? By saying
it's contradicting the Holocaust itself. But I mean, by then it hasn't really got the wheels turning. Didn't he really get the wheels turning until the '70s? So this is why he didn't find in the memoirs of Churchill and one or two others, I mentioned in coming by the back door, something like, you know, 7,000 pages of three books by officials like Churchill and de Gaulle and someone else, can't think of his name. But at the moment, you know, in that period with 7,000 pages, there wasn't one mention of a gas chamber or anything to do with gas chambers.
And they hadn't started calling it the Holocaust at that time yet, had they? I mean, as you say, that wasn't until the 70s
where it really started.
But no mention of gas chambers, and what mention there was by people that were obviously lying to such an extent that the military police had to get involved and send out a memo saying, you've got to put a stop to this. These are falsehoods. This is not helping anyone to be making up stories like this. I mean, that's a pretty important memo, I would suggest.
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, that was written in 1948. The trials were 45 and 46, and yet here we are today, 2019, and there are laws in place forcing people to say that, oh, we believe in 6 million Jews being gassed. It's almost like the Nicene Creed, isn't it? We believe in this. Yeah. It's like a religious statement. And if you think about it and say, well, that's not actually possible, you know, you're a blasphemer, aren't you? You're a denier. I mean, that is our new religion.
Right.
The Holocaust is the religion of the New World Order. Well, you then get into the architects of the New World Order, and the Germans exposed all of this. And why they were able to expose all of this is because they started disbanding the Freemasons' lodges and taking the property from them. And that was January the 8th, 1934. So was that as soon as the National Socialists were in power, they started doing that?
It wasn't long after, 33, I think they came in January 33. So it wasn't long after. They probably had one or two things to sort out first until they got around to it. But it wasn't just the Nazis who was aware of it, though. I can remember seeing a PDF of Ludendorff, who'd done research into Freemasonry, and he was damning it all the way through. So, but obviously, you know, the National Socialists jumped on it, and for a long time on YouTube, I had to really argue with people. They were calling them all Freemasons. Hitler was a Freemason, and this, that, and the other. And it wasn't until I got from this occult site a list of all the lodges that he closed in Germany that the, you know, the ice cracked then. It was obvious that, you know, he looked at Freemasonry as an enemy. And then you went on to find out he closed it down in France. Franco closed it down in Spain. Mussolini closed it down in Italy. So all the nationalists obviously knew what was going on, and in unison closed everything down. And every country that Germany went into in Europe, the same happened.
Well, once they went in there, once they went into the lodges and started taking the property, you know, they found the evidence for what was going on, and this plan for a world government, and you know, they had exhibitions showing that they made the world aware of that, and they made the countries that they occupied, they were aware of it. All the countries that were allied to them, right, they were aware of it, and removed the Freemasons. And in Germany, they banned all Freemasons from holding office or doing public service in any way. So they were basically kept where they couldn't do any damage.
Well, what they would have found, amongst things that obviously, you know, we're not aware of, but they would have found this race mixing agenda, which came from Kudinov Kalori, and, you know, was maintained by Freemasons who revered the idea. And Churchill would be one of them as well. And so, you know, people have this incredible thing about Churchill being this wonderful British patriot, but he would have actually been stood on that balcony with the Queen as well. The Queen would have known that all these white faces were celebrating now with One World War II are out for extinction.
Well, Churchill was mixed race anyway.
She can't deny it.
Churchill was mixed race. I mean, there was one MP, I forget which one, might have been Clement Attlee or the Prime Minister before Winston Churchill. And when Churchill had a tantrum, he said that was the nigger in his blood showing. And that was because he was mixed race, and his mother was a red Indian. So he was one of these mixed race new Europeans that Kudinhove Kalergi wanted to create anyway. I mean, that may have played into the fact as to why, you know, why they wanted to promote him. He was obviously one of the outliers, one of the exceptions to the rule, which, you know, which has a high IQ. I mean, you do get them. They've got one today that they have on the BBC News. He used to be the editor, I think, of the Independent. Very dark skinned, like mystery meat. But he's obviously got a high IQ. Yeah. So they put him forward as, you know, as their researcher and their editor.
Expert.
The expert. So people see that and they think, oh, they're just like us. So, you know, they're just as bright and intelligent as us. Of course, that's the exception to the rule. You know, his children won't be. You know, he'll just be a genetic throwback. Getting back to the Masons here, the Germans, you know, they identified the Masons as being their ideological foes in their worldview, which is quite important.
Yeah, which is true.
Well, if you think...
I mean,
if
people
you think,
don't believe that... they formed communism. The Freemasons, the banker, US bankers who funded the Russian Revolution, they actually brought up the idea of communism. Marx was a Jew. You know, everybody else involved were all Jewish, and they were all Freemasons.
Well, think about what we got today. What have we got today? We've got nationalists versus globalists. And that's exactly what the National Socialists were saying. We are nationalists, and the Masons are globalists. They're internationalists. Yeah. They want a world republic. That's what they called it back then, a world republic. That's what the New World Order is. You know, that's what the UN was supposed to be going towards forming, and the League of Nations before that, and the European Union. It's about these supranational organizations that take away the sovereignty from the nations that are a part of that, and hand that to a group of people that are not answerable to those nations, that are there serving these bankers, and at the same time serving these Masonic ideals of deifying man, and these rights of man and human rights, and we're all one brotherhood, and we'll mix them all together, and all of that goes back to Babylon. You know, it's an age-old thing that has been going on.
Yeah. One world government. Yeah.
And, you know, the National Socialists, they identified that this is what the Masons are doing, and they published it, and they showed the proof of it. In these exhibitions, Goebbels exhibitions, they showed the proof of what the Masons had been doing. They put it into films. They put it into Dark Forces, that film that was produced that showed how it was the Masons that were working within France after the revolution to start the war.
Correct.
Yeah, E. Michael Jones. And don't forget
the war with the Catholic Church, because we now know that the Vatican now brought Hitler to power. As we found out in one of the episodes, how they told the Centre Party to support Hitler, then dissolve. So the Vatican is obviously pro-Hitler, and the Freemasons obviously are anti-Vatican and anti-Hitler, and vice versa with Hitler. He's obviously anti-Freemasonry because of what they've done to the Catholic Church.
Well, the Catholic Church was the main enemy, wasn't it? The Catholic Church was the enemy number one of Freemasonry.
The only
for
one.
A long time.
The only one who spoke out against them, yeah?
For a long time. And the Jesuits were like the Catholic Church's own Freemasons, basically, like fight fire with fire. We'll have our own secret society.
Exactly.
And we'll fight against them. And then the Jesuits themselves, you know, parts of the way that the Jesuits work, the National Socialists looked at for the SS, as you showed in another one of your episodes. Yep. And again, this is before the Jesuits fell. The Catholic Church has fallen, the Jesuits has fallen, our governments have fallen. You know, everything's just become more and more corrupt from a perfect beginning, which is
the Catholic Church is not the same today. Everybody can see that.
Well, this idea of
Paul talks double Dutch
of a perfect beginning and then becoming more corrupt. I mean, that's always been the belief. You know, you've got a golden age and then the age of iron and then the age of clay or whatever it is. That, you know, that was the Greek belief.
If
you
look at, proved, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the Bible, you've got these people with these great long lengths of age that they had, you know, living for 1,000 years, and then gradually they get less and less healthy, and their bodies, you know, give out on them, and they only live for 100 years or whatever, and then we get to today where everything is, you know, is really corrupt, and all our institutions have become corrupted by this force. But you know, but we've still got good virtuous people out there that hold fast to the truth and that fight against it. And that's what the National Socialists were doing. That's, you know, that's what we're continuing to do today by exposing it and by talking about it.
I just don't think that because they won the war, the Allies won the war, they've hidden a lot of what we would have, you know, known and understood to be what we're talking about. I mean, you know, they made sure that they were demonized. The word Nazi meant evil. You know, and it was brainwashed into everybody, and it's amazing. You know, I'm pretty sure if we could go back in time and we found out what they were really, really trying to do, we'd be amazed. We really would.
Well, the pictures of what was shown in these exhibitions that were exposing the Masons, there's very, very little about that you can find today. And I mean, there must have been a lot of information about it back then. You know, they've done a really thorough job on removing that in the hopes that people just won't find out about it. Because, you know, they make such a huge fuss about what went on with the Jews, but you never hear them going on about, you know, what went on with the Masons. And the Masons were treated as enemies of the state, exactly the same as the Jews were. They were even put in the camps. You know, they were put in the camps, and they were designated as political prisoners.
Red triangles upside down. Yeah.
because that's what they were. They were seen as a political force that was seeking to take over the nation and then ally it with other nations for a supranational world government. The same ideals that the communists had, and the communists were doing it through a different way, through trying to get the workers to fight against the rich. You know, you had all these various different ways of trying to get all these nations together under one government. Today, you've got climate change. You know, that's the latest golem being used. Yeah. It's the same goal in mind, though, isn't it? All these countries of the world under a world government.
I noticed about 3 or 4 weeks ago, they were intense on TV with all the programs about climate change. You couldn't switch it on without somebody going on about it. And it's just a lot of hogwash. I mean, you know, oil doesn't come from dinosaurs. Oil's a natural resource, and there's lots of it. They're cracking on that, you know, it's going to run out. It ain't going to run out.
It can't be made from fossils. I think there's a lot of evidence to show that it's not from whatever it is, fossilized trees and plants. It can't actually come from that. It's a substance that's, you know, under the ground. But besides that is this carbon dioxide. You know, carbon dioxide is what the plants breathe, basically. And when you have greenhouses...
Yeah, to give us oxygen.
Yeah, well, in the greenhouses, people pump carbon dioxide in there to make the plants grow bigger. And they can take five times as much carbon dioxide as we have now. And that's because the Earth had five times as much carbon dioxide at some point in the past. If you look back to the Middle Ages, we were growing vines here in Britain. We had a wine-making industry, and the temperature was much warmer than it is now. And that was all the way across Europe. And that wasn't caused by man in the industrial age. That was just the climate. It was just the weather. The weather changes. It's just used as an excuse for the same goal of getting all the nations to give up their sovereignty under this one group. And this one group will be directed by the bankers who are at the top, you know, the bankers, the Freemasons, the Jews, they're all one and the same. They're all one and the same. They're all interconnected. And that's one of the ways where people get lost with the conspiracy stuff. But, you know, because they see the Rothschilds. Oh, it must be the Rothschilds. It's all these Rothschilds that are connected. Oh, it's the Rockefellers. You know, all these Rockefellers are all connected. Oh, it's Skull and Bones. Well, no, it's all of them. All of them together. They're all interconnected at the top.
That's right.
And, I think they've probably been the same people ruling us going back thousands of years, you know, and wherever the center of civilization is, that's where they moved to. At one point it was Babylon.
Yeah.
Another time it was Rome. You know, now it's London and it's New York.
You're right.
And these big rich families, it was probably the same lines. People. Yeah. Yeah. The same people.
The key bloodlines. Yeah. Intermarry.
And they know things that we don't know as well.
Yeah, well, they're taught different in these private schools. I mean, the schools that Cameron goes to, totally different to what we're taught in an ordinary school. You know, they're well aware of things.
Well, and besides that, they're actually given a proper education, aren't they? They're taught Latin, they're taught classics, they're taught, you know, the way that civilization has grown, because it's their civilization. They're the ones that are in charge. They're the ones that were born to rule over everybody else.
I think
these elites.
It goes far back as Plato, you know. I think Plato started all this off.
With his Republic. Yeah. I haven't actually read Plato's Republic, but it does get name checked a lot, doesn't it? This idea of democracy. Where they basically
Kalergi mentioned him at one point.
Yeah, well, I notice you've got an English translation of Kalergi's book as well. We'll have to do something on that one week and have a good look through that. As I was saying, these Masons were treated; they were identified as political prisoners, the same as a lot of the Jews and the communists were. And you've managed to locate this information that 80,000 to 20,000 Masons were executed.
So
80,000 to 200,000. So. You know, why don't they make a big fuss about that, like they do about, you know, these Jews that were executed?
Well, I think they don't want to draw attention to it again because they don't want people investigating it. You know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, I've always said it. I can't understand why I did the Masonic picture of World War II, but nobody else ever mentions Freemasons. And why? Got to be a reason.
Well, and again, they don't want the, they know that people are investigate the Masons. They know that people are against the Masons. So the last thing they want is people to realise that Hitler stood against them. You know, the last thing they would want is David Icke realising that. I mean, because Icke goes on about it all the time, doesn't he? And yet they got you know, one of the greatest people to ever stand in the way of them. You know, he thinks was a bad guy. So it's not in their interest.
Their biggest enemy. Yeah.
Because you would think they would want to say, well, feel sorry for these poor Masons, like you feel sorry for these Jews, these poor Masons that just, you know, they just look after orphans and widows, and here are the nasty Germans executing them. But they, and again,
they don't get payments, do they?
Well, they wouldn't have been executed. Well, they wouldn't have been executed just for being Masons either. It would have been for, treason. It would have been for subverting the nation. For the benefit of Freemasonry, because that's what they were exposing, was the fact that there was this plan to take over the world.
This column.
And have this whatever it was called, it's called the New World Order now, a World Republic. That was it. They were accused of seeking to make a world
republic.
People
still don't know about it now. You know, there's still some people not aware of it.
Well, this is the thing. They knew about it in the 40s and the 50s.
Yep.
I mean, this was public knowledge. There was Nestor Webster who wrote about this and the secret societies. There was the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion that was publicly available that people read, even though the Jews tried to discredit it. I mean, people could see that that's what's going on. And you had the Bolshevik Revolution. You had Churchill saying that it was Jews at the top of this Bolshevik Revolution. And then you had Nestor Webster that was showing that it was to do with the Freemasons as well. So there were a lot of this information was out there. It was in bookstores and the general public knew about it. And that's why there was a massive support for Oswald Mosley and the Union of Fascists and all the other nationalist movements around Europe, because the general public were aware of these things and were aware of this Masonic influence. And then at the end of the war, you know, they silenced it all, silenced these books.
Yeah, and it certainly did.
This information got rid of all the
controlled all the media, didn't they, and the books and everything. And
yeah, the same thing.
What we were left with.
Same thing that they did in Germany. They've done throughout the rest of Europe. You know, with the denazification, showing people these supposed Nazi atrocities on the one hand, and then on the other hand, sexualizing everything and dumbing everybody down with sexual imagery everywhere, which is what they started doing in Germany after the war. Until we end up with today. Well, after that, you leave the Masons and you move to Iran. And really, we should look more deeply into this in another episode. But what you're basically saying is, in 1933, Germany had a very, very strong relationship with the Shah of Iran, and such a strong relationship that 50% of Iranian trade was actually with Germany. And this was based upon the historical investigations that the Germans had done into the Aryans, because obviously Iran and Persia was a central point for the Aryan civilization, which is where the word Iran comes from, and Zoroaster the Aryan race, basically, the Indo-Europeans, Indo-Aryans, that was the central point, was Iran. So there was a lot of research that was going on there. And obviously the Iranians were chuffed to bits with this, because the leading nation in Europe was Germany. And Germany was saying, we come from these Iranians. You know, we are distant relatives to these Iranians. And even though the Iranians are mixed with Arab blood now, I mean, 2,000 years back, 3,000 years back, they would have looked very similar to Europeans today. Just they don't now. But so that's why that link was there. Do you want to comment on that a bit more, Dennis?
Yeah, well, it's something that surprised me, I'm going to be honest. It's not something I'd heard of, but when I went on the internet, it's pretty much everywhere, and it's not just on Wikipedia. I mean, I wouldn't have thought Wikipedia would have wanted to see Hitler, you know, kind of being non-racist in their eyes. But certainly there's quite a bit about it on the internet. Because I didn't believe it myself at first. I went on there and I mean, just for instance, from Wikipedia, it says here, you know, the Hitler cabinet in 1936 declared the Iranians to be immune from the Nuremberg laws as they were considered to be pure Aryans. The Iranian government, however, did not support the anti-Semitism of the Nazis, which is always going to say that Wikipedia anyway. So, but it makes you wonder why Iran has always been a target of Israel. That's what that got me thinking.
Well, I think that probably goes back to this time, doesn't it? I mean, there was a very, very strong relationship with Germany and Iran. The Shah asked the international community to refer to Persia as Iran and as the land of the Aryans instead of Persia. So they were obviously very keen to be seen at the same level as the white people in Europe. I mean, the Persians, yep. You know, they're the closest of all the Arabs to Europeans. I mean, they look similar to Bashar al-Assad, but Bashar al-Assad is still, you know, he's not European and he's not what I would say white. I saw an interview with him the other day. You can see his fingers on his hands. He's got really long fingers like Negro hands, even though he's got white skin. You know, odd things like that. They have got mixed blood, but probably the least mixed blood out of all these Arab types. So there was, and the Germans actually gave them a huge library containing all this information that they had found, which showed the close ties between the Indo-Europeans, the Indo-Aryans, and the European Aryans, and the history of that. And then you got the bit about this exemption from the Nuremberg laws, and I thought, well, that you know, that doesn't quite make sense there. I'd like to see more detail on that, because the Nuremberg laws were about not preserving the blood of the Germans. And of course, if the Germans were to go into breeding with Iranians, that would destroy the blood of the Germans, and there wouldn't be any pure Aryans left because they'd have mixed with these mixed ones. So it can't have been that the Iranians were exempt from. What it was more likely to be is the second part of the law. And I'll just quote here from Wikipedia about the Nuremberg laws. The two laws were the law for the protection of German blood and German honour, which forbade marriages and extramarital intercourse between Jews and Germans and the employment of German females under 45 in Jewish households. And then the Reich citizenship law, which declared that only those of German or related blood were eligible to be Reich citizens. The remainder were classed as state subjects without any citizenship rights. A supplementary decree outlining the definition of who was Jewish was passed on the 14th of November, and the Reich citizenship law officially came into force on that date. The laws were expanded on 26th of November 1935 to include Romani people and black people. This supplementary decree defined Romania as enemies of the race-based state. Romani, sorry, as enemies of the race-based state, the same category as Jews. So by saying that they were exempt from the Nuremberg laws, I think it was probably that second bit saying that they could be Reich citizens, or it was saying that they're not enemies of the race-based state, that they're not to be put in the same category as Jews. Because I should imagine Arabs were put in the same category as Jews, because they're Semites, aren't they? You know, Jews and Arabs.
Yeah, ethnically, I would think so.
Ethnologically, they're the same. So maybe it was an exemption from that, because I can't see that they were saying, oh, yes, you know, intercourse can take place between Germans and Iranians, because what would be the point of having a law to preserve the blood of the Germans if you're going to allow it to be intermingled with the blood of the Iranians? So that I think, you know, we'll have to do more research into that. But I'd like to do more research into this Iranian connection anyway. But it was considered so important to them that the Allies invaded Iran.
Yeah, you know? Joint Russian and British invasion.
Yeah, Anglo-Soviet attack. And you think, well, you know, Russia is pretty tight with Iran today, isn't it? Pretty, you know, gets on well with Iran today.
Yeah, it does get on well with them, yeah, to be fair.
And yet it was an Anglo-Soviet attack on Iran.
Yeah. And also, I haven't got into it as yet. I just saw it in passing, but I'll get back into it at some point, where after the war, the certain land had been taken from them, was promised to be given back, and obviously Stalin weren't forgiving them back. So in 1946, there was a bit of a heated row going on, but I don't know any more than that at the moment. That's as far as I got, like.
Yeah, but what they did, what the, you know, what the Allies did when they invaded Iran, they basically forced the Shah to resign. 3 weeks after the invasion, they forced him to resign. So they interfered in the sovereignty of Iran, and Iran's nowhere near Europe. You know, I don't really see how that kind of affected, you know, the war with Germany and the war that was going on in Europe, and yet they felt that they needed to invade.
Well, they were neutral invade as well. Iran. Yeah.
Well, and they were doing this trade with Germany. I mean, maybe that was it. They wanted to just stop Germany receiving any goods from them. But, you know, this shows, you know, where this animosity is going to come from between Iran and America. Because, you know, Iran says, well, America and Britain have interfered so many times in our history. You know, the revolution, I mean, this is just one instance of where the Shah was toppled and, you know, Britain and America forced a new one in his place. But I know that's happened since then, hasn't it? I don't know if it's twice since then.
Michael Jones once said that after they got rid of the Shah and Ayatollah was put in place, they said they'd never interfere with Iranian, you know, politics again. And he burst out laughing because obviously they always have done.
Yeah, they've done it so many times. And of course, this is why they had the Tehran conference in 1943, that's why it took place in Tehran. Because I've you know, wondered that. Why did that take place in Tehran?
Why, yeah. And the Aryan.
Just remind us what went on there at the Tehran conference, Dennis.
Well, I think it's one of them times when Hitler was hoping that he could send someone out there to assassinate him, believe it or not. Unless that was the Yalta one. But, yeah.
It was 1943.
It's strange that... Yeah, well, it's strange because it's in the land of the Aryan. This is what the guy was saying, and the fact that there must be more to it, that they chose that place because, you know, of the obvious defeat that they could see that Germany were going to have at that time. So that's why I look at today and I think it's got something to do with why Israel are always looking for a fight with Iran, or to use America to fight for them. But yeah, I mean, Stalin, Churchill and Roosevelt were there, sat there deciding on what was going to happen to Germany in the land of the Aryans, you know, after the war.
Yeah, all sat there in the ancient homeland of the Aryans discussing, you know, the defeat of the Nordic Aryans.
Of the Nordic Aryans. Significant.
So what do you got there? You got the non-white Churchill, you got the Jewish Roosevelt, and you got the questionable Stalin with his Jewish mistresses and Jewish wives and fluent in Yiddish, possibly Jewish as well. So you got all these non-Aryan people.
We're all Freemasons, I'm sure.
That's it. They're all non-Aryan and they're all Freemasons. So finally, you move on to an interview with John Amery. And I think we might have seen some of this before. Did you put this interview up before somewhere as part of a documentary or on its own, Dennis?
Yeah. Well, I put it up on YouTube when I found it. Obviously, it's pretty rare to find an interview of his. And this was recorded in Norway. And I put the whole interview up, but this time I just used the back end of it because they were emphasising what I've always tried to emphasise is the fact that Christianity was one reason that, you know, people went to Europe and try and stop communism because they knew what would happen if the communists won, as we see today. So, you know, his father was in Churchill's cabinet, so he's well in the know of what's going on. And even he's turned around and said, you know, it's a traitor to England, traitor to the empire, you know, traitor to Christianity and to civilization. I just thought it's a poignant line because, you know, they try and hide that. I believe they try and hide the Christianity factor from us because it gives them more opportunity to wipe out more Christians without anybody knowing why.
He makes a big point of that, doesn't he? When he's accused, you know, aren't you going to be seen as a traitor? And then he points out who the real traitors are, and just what it is that they are committing treason against. Oh, we've reached the end of the podcast here, Dennis. That's flown past tonight. Thank you very much for coming on.
RadioAlbion.com.